It's been some weeks since, thankfully and finally, you're back out here with us, you know, from being upstate. So what are some of the most prominent facets of life back out here that you've noticed, particularly, you know, those things that you found to be either unexpected or those things that you appreciate the most being back out here, or anything that you found particularly jarring since you've been out with us these past few weeks?
Yeah, to start, New York, I was away for a little minute, so I forgot how woo New York really was. That's one thing that stuck out to me first. When I first was, like, reintroduced back to society, like the government likes to say, that New York is pretty woo. So I had to adjust to that. And basically, in a lot of, I actually get to see, like, injustice firsthand. So from my perspective, being incarcerated, we read about it and we hear it, like, watching the news, watching the reading, Final Four newspaper, whatever newspaper it is that you read. It's a different than actually seeing firsthand, like, police brutality or just injustice, period, happening. And I was, like, a victim. But then, like, the first 4 days I came home, me and my friends, we were driving, we got pulled over. For no apparent reason, the cop pulled us over. It was a bunch of, like, miscellaneous things. We didn't get a ticket or anything, but it was just the point that my friend had a nice car, and we young, so it's just to see that and actually experience it is different from seeing it on TV and getting my point of view from it. That's another thing that was actually, like, hard to deal with, to actually know how to, because, like, from in prison, we know how to go about it, because we're not actually in the trenches, right? So we can actually see from outside to know, like, pinpoint which ones to put into place and to know who's in charge and how to go about the situation. But until you actually in the ring with the actual opponent, it's different from you standing on the sideline coaching. So I have to readjust, like, my game plan, my strategy. I have to readjust it for actually being out here now.
Definitely hear you on that. And so just as a follow-up, what are some of the, if you don't mind sharing some of what you've learned through these kinds of experiences, what are some of the kind of alterations as regards tactics that you've found helpful as far as out here now that you're back on the outside?
Being out here, you have a little more, like, freedom, so-called freedom, right? So you have a little bit more of that, so I could be more boisterous than actually when I was incarcerated, but we really have, we're still slaves, right, according to the amendment. So you have no right in there. But as a out here, I can actually stand up more. Even though I did when I was incarcerated, I didn't take nothing from no one. And I voiced my opinion at all times, but now I actually have more of a backing, I have more of a support while being out here. So before, like, a tactic that I was using while incarcerated would be, like, a grievance program, even though that's, you just might know, like, a cousin to the government, right? So that doesn't really work out. But now, as a head outside, I can actually hire someone that's really going to work for the people. So it's different. And so I can be angry more. I can show my anger. And then you got to conceal it a little bit, like, compact it. They got a lot of people in prison that have a lot of compact anger. So it's hard for them to actually, like, brash out with some type of resolution or anything, right? But as of out here, I can really give an answer. I can really make an argument. Yeah, somebody's on my other line, pardon me.
No doubt, I'll pause.
Yeah, but I can actually, I hung up on a person.
Okay.
But I can really, like, fight more. It's easier for me to fight from out here because the rights that they give us, right? It's like the little bit of rights that we do have, we have out here, like the first amendment, I can speak more freely. I can do certain things that we are not allowed to do because of some consequences. So that's one thing I do. I speak more while I'm out here. I like to argue a little bit. So I'll go out, I'll sit there and argue with a cop, right, officer.
Right. No, I definitely appreciate it. And you mentioned the 13th, and this is very much connected with the theme of the newsletter that's about to go in for this issue of Kite. And so could you just expand a little bit on the 13th Amendment, how you relate to that particular amendment, and how you came to be exposed to the 13th Amendment, particularly the exception clause?
Yeah, basically the 13th Amendment, it speaks on slavery, abolishing of slavery. It basically explains how slavery was abolished, I remember 1895, around there, I can't really remember right now off the top of my head, but slavery was abolished except if you commit a crime. So I didn't know this. Most people don't know this. Right? Still to this day, most people don't know this. I didn't come to like aware of this until I read Michelle Alexander, the New Jim Crow. I didn't know about that. And I read that, I think, 2011. I was 17. So I didn't know none of this. And I had uncles that was in prison. And I know I've read a few books while I was in the streets. I didn't know anything about this, so not knowing, it's really not. I don't fault people for not knowing that, like, the system that we play ourselves into. But it's once you get this information about the 13th Amendment, we have to stop, like, forcing our hands into this, like, repetitive system, this, like, system that's made to enslave us back, because, like, these folks didn't want to abolish slavery. They never wanted to abolish slavery because slavery had the money. It's a capitalist state, so the money, what was feeding the state was the slave, and then they grew the technology, and et cetera. But then that capitalistic state grew into hatred of blacks and browns. So in order for them to keep them at the bottom, they had to find a way to make what slavery was legal. So now you can't just do it out in the open. So now you have to readjust the game, right? So everything grows. So you have to, that's now you got a lot of time, you got the time. So everything grows through time. So slavery is still, that's what the 13th Amendment basically is. It's still here. It's just now is in the prison system or in the Walmart and different things like this. And it affects us. And it affects me personally because I'm black. That's number one. And now I have the awareness that I have to speak to people about it, about what's going on. And I felt victim to it. I have a felony, so I'm stuck in this system until I think 15, 20 years. I have to, and then they can like erase my felony. So I'm stuck in this system of being categorized as either a former slave, if you say, or still a enslaved person that's just walking around the streets. The 13th Amendment really affects our lives a lot.
Absolutely. And you are an individual who not only served time inside under prison slavery as a juvenile, but also someone who took it upon himself to organize on the inside and to help others to come to the kinds of awareness that you've just spoken of and the kind of awareness that you have about the system that we're up against. So could you, in just its contours, could you just share a little bit with us about the challenges of organizing on the inside as well as some of those elements of inside organizing that we on the outside might not expect about, you know, how heads relate to inside organizing?
Yeah, so to start, I'm part of the Nation of Islam. And in prison, and throughout the world also, the Nation of Islam has a bad reputation, right, to be this hating organization, a racism organization, and to just preach violence, right, through Malcolm X. Malcolm X is supposed to be a violent person, and this foul part. So we already have this anti-police, anti-white persona against us, which is false, right? So, and from then also I'm a part of, I was, since I'm no longer in prison now, but I was on a board of NAACP, which is also a semi-hated organization in prison also. So with that, you start off with the Deputy Security. He's the one that controls all the movements, or then you got the Deputy Program. He's the one that actually sanctions what's being won in the jail. So if you want to do a turn of violence program, you have to go through him. You have to get his signature. Then he has to trickle all the way down. So when the Deputy Security actually sees Kevin Steele, my name on the paper, and then he recognized my name as being a member of the Nation of Islam or being a board of NAACP. And he's like, these two organizations are trying to make change. So he would come up with an excuse as to why we can't accomplish or get things done that we're trying to do. Before I came home, we was trying to do for Black History Month. I came home in January, so we was planning for Black History Month. And we wanted to do a play again. So these group of brothers wrote a good play. It was about the Black Panther. And we sent it to them. And instead of showing the whole, because the population is 93% Black and Latino. 93% of Black and Latino. So instead of allowing us to teach our brothers the history of where we come from, and our freedom fighters, he says it'll preach violence. But then to go on Saturday, they show a movie. Saturday and Sunday, they show a movie. They'll show a movie about race. But they'll show a war movie. But it never adds up. It's just when it's time for us to try to educate our brothers, they'll stop us. So recently, there's another organization. I'm affiliated with JC. One of the brothers wanted. They're trying to do a STEM program. They like the science and all that. They're trying to do a STEM program, and they stopped that because that brother's part of the Nation also. So there's certain things that a lot of outside people, a lot of outside organizations don't expect when they reach out to brothers in jail, and they're wondering why we're not like reaching out back. And it's not our fault. It's not the ones in prison fault. It's out of the debt that's stopping interaction with outside organizations, or it's just the mailman's not sending the mail out, or when the mail is supposed to go out, they'll hold it weeks on, or sometimes the mail don't get to you. That happened to me bunches of times. I've sent out mail to people, they never received it. People send me mail. Even you and Iowa sent me pieces of mail, and I have pieces missing. But it's just, they pick and choose individuals that's trying to make a change, but it's just like in society, if you're not trying to make a change, they'll let you go. You can walk on freely. Like, I have like a, because in prison, we have this joke, I used to call NTN, it's non-threatening Negroes. Like, they love non-threatening Negroes. So those are ones that's going to get by with anything. They can do anything in the jail, but they're not trying to shake the system. But for brothers that's trying to make a change, educate, they're not going to allow it. I taught AVP, that's the Alternative Violence Project. That program is well known. They canceled it in the jail that I just came from. They canceled it twice. The first time they canceled it, we fought. We sent it to Albany. We fought for it to come back. It came back for 2 weeks. And then recently I heard they canceled it again. They canceled it for good. This Alternative Violence Program. If you have a bunch of violent inmates, and this is a voluntary program, this is not a mandatory program, this is a voluntary program, why would they take this from us? Because it's not about rehabilitation. It's about the continuous cycle of us coming back and forth, back and forth. So, like he said, he can crush them still as he came from. They've taken all the programs out. They want to take Ball out. And Ball College is good. They have a good debate team. They defeated the top schools. They defeated Harvard. They defeated Brown. They defeated top schools. Now they want to take that out. So it's just, it's a competitive, I mean, it's a competitive system that they want to, they ain't really trying to change nothing. They're just trying to continue the cycle because they need to feed their families, right? So, and if we're not going back and forth to prison, how are they going to eat?
Exactly. And that's the bottom fundamental truth of this system of prison slavery that needs to be foregrounded out here, because once those kinds of very raw economic realities, the realities of these characters' livelihoods are made clear, then nobody can dispute the fact of prison slavery and the fact that, you know, just like any other form of slavery, it's driven at least in large part by economics, you know. And so much appreciated for that. And I would very much like to continue this in the form of some sort of series, if you're with it. Okay, great. Great. So then with that said, for those that will be peeping this interview in text form through the newsletter, I would just like to ask you, what would you like to leave with those who will be seeing this on the inside? You know, as someone who in the last issue of Kite brought us a very strong essay about our youth and cultural appropriation and anti-blackness, you know, and it was a very potent write-up. And now here you are addressing us from the outside. So for those that, you know, will be reading this and recognizing the reality of that kind of transition, what would you like to leave with those individuals?
Yeah, that the fight, I mean, me and my brother, one time he was walking around and he was speaking on coming home, like the fight is out here, we have to fight out here. That's true also, but the fight starts in there. You have to have the passion for the people, right? That's what the Huey always spoke on, that you have to really love the people. Fred Hampton always spoke about that also. You have to really, really love the people, and that's how from there. So you can't hold on till you say, "I'm going to go home." That's where the fight starts. It doesn't. It's a marathon, right? We would have been finished if it was just a race. It was a marathon. You have to learn as much as possible because you have all the free time in there. And I realize that now is I'm a distraction. It's distractions out here. They have all the time to study and gain as much knowledge as possible. And the fight starts in there. Once that you take that fight experience, you bring it out here. And I just like the one quote. It's my favorite quote. Believe by George Jackson. He said, "You'll never count me amongst the broken men." And I love that quote. And I just want for everybody to always remember that. Don't let this system break. Don't let this break you. Don't be counted amongst the broken people. Always stay strong. Stay firm. Whatever it is that you believe in, whether it's gonna either is gonna cost you to do more time. I was gonna do that to fight for the people, or is that you gonna lose your life? Like Joe Jackson, but he's like, this is just flesh and bones, right? So Joe Jackson is immortal. See, he died in 71. It's 2018, we still speak his name. Then they're going to speak his name in 2028. So he's immortal. We just flesh and bone is not here. So don't be counted among the broken men. Stay strong and continue to fight. The fight's not done. That's it. Peace.
Peace.